At 6:20, this is KERA News. I'm Justin Martin. A report out today finds that despite a new Texas law, young children are still at risk of being suspended in school districts across the state. That law prohibits out-of-school suspensions for students in pre-K through second grade, except under certain circumstances, such as bringing a gun to school. Still, advocates are concerned about the number of in-school suspensions. Stephanie Rubin is the CEO of Texans Care for Children. She says more can be done to help students.
People have been calling for, you know, more counselors, smaller pre-K classes, more training and assistance to districts who want to implement positive behavioral strategies in their schools.
Rubin says suspensions are especially harmful to young students because they get the impression that school is a negative place and they lose out on instructional time in class. State data indicates Texas schools disproportionately suspend pre-K to second grade students who are boys, black, in special education, or in foster care. The maternal mortality crisis in Texas was the focus of this weekend of some of the state's leading physicians. As KUT's Ashley Lopez reports, doctors with the Texas Medical Association vetted different ideas to reduce the deaths of women while pregnant or shortly after giving birth.
One of the biggest challenges in the state right now is access to care. Dr. Carlos Cardenas, the president of the Texas Medical Association, says that problem starts with family planning.
Since the legislature vastly reduced funding for family planning in 2011, we've seen a 27% increase in unplanned pregnancies. 27%. Unplanned pregnancies are more likely to result in maternal and infant complications, perhaps because their pre-pregnancy health wasn't ideal.
And then others pointed out Medicaid isn't serving enough women or long enough after they give birth. Dr. Ryan Van Ramschort says Texas didn't expand Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act, so many women are not getting health care before they're pregnant. And then he says women are kicked out of the state's Medicaid program just 60 days after giving birth.
So Medicaid is key to improving women's health and addressing our alarmingly high rate of maternal mortality and morbidity. And we know that Medicaid provides preventive, prenatal, and postpartum care.
Physicians also talked about how to tackle substance abuse and opioid overdoses among pregnant women in the state. Opioid deaths are one of the big drivers of maternal deaths that aren't solely linked to pregnancy. During that meeting, members also talked about efforts to improve data collection in the state. Getting good data from death certificates has been an ongoing problem. And then there was a discussion about why black women were dying at higher rates than white women while pregnant or after giving birth. Dr. Carla Ortiz says individual and institutionalized racism are to blame. And she says there's both ethical and economic reasons for physicians to address those issues.
And until we address these issues, the inequities will persist. And that's why I'm so happy that we're talking about it today. But why should we care? Aside from the ethical and moral reasons that we as physicians are pledged to, it's economically imperative to address these issues.
Ortiz says research shows racial inequities cost Americans more than $300 million a year. In a private session, doctors discuss some ideas they have to change a lot of the problems facing pregnant women in the state. Among them is an effort to expand Medicaid coverage to up to a year after a woman gives birth. Other proposals suggest improving data collection and training at hospitals. Ashley Lopez, KUT News.
Want to start a successful business? You need a great idea, of course, paying customers. And when you want to grow your business, you'll need access to capital. KEI's Christina Martinez explains why historically people of color and women have a harder time securing business loans and investor funding.
About 50 entrepreneurs and investors are packed into a sleek, modern meeting space near downtown Dallas. They're buzzing about the latest winner of a $100,000 grant.
Hi, my name's Courtney Caldwell, co-founder and COO of Shearshare.
I'm Dr. Ty Caldwell, co-founder and CEO of Shearshare.
The husband-wife duo from Dallas built Shearshare, an app that matches hair, nail, and beauty stylists to empty salon space. The Caldwells beat out 86 other businesses to win the North Texas round of a competition awarding money to startups across Texas led by women or people of color. The Caldwells had the beauty industry experience. They're stylists and hair salon owners. But they were new to the tech startup scene and raising money.
We had no idea that there were people out there who would give you money to go build your dream.
We laughed about that because I've been an entrepreneur since I was like 19 years old. Yeah. So I've never had to go to anyone and say, can you give me some money? I mean, I've been able to do it by myself for so long. So
Caldwell's knew a friend in California who worked with startups. She loved their idea for ShareShare. So the Caldwells began networking, researching, and building their app. They met with an investor in California, and it didn't go well.
We come in, we sit down at the table, it's two gentlemen across from us, and it's us two. The first thing out of his mouth is, oh, you know, I'm kind of glad that you guys are not the average white male graduate from Stanford wearing a V-neck sweater.
That encounter is more common than you'd think. A number of studies in the last 10 years have found non-white and women entrepreneurs often face big hurdles when seeking small business loans. According to the Minority Business Development Agency, people of color are three times more likely to be denied for loans. Non-white and women entrepreneurs are also more likely to rely on personal savings or credit cards for their businesses. And when they do secure a loan or an investor, non-white and women entrepreneurs typically don't get as much money as their white counterparts.
I think that we forget the correlation that generational practices have on access that people have today.
Michelle Williams is the executive director of the Red Bird Entrepreneurship Center. It's designed to support entrepreneurs in Southern Dallas who haven't had the same access to business resources compared to other parts of the city. She points to redlining, which limited housing options for people of color, and how it affects where people live and how they build wealth.
Even today, we see housing values are very much tied to the color of the person that lives in that community.
And today, there's still lingering effects from lending discrimination, which was prohibited in 1974. A survey last year from the Federal Reserve Bank of Dallas found access to capital is the number one concern for women and non-white small business owners in Texas. Emily Ryder is a community development analyst for the Dallas Fed.
There is a pay and wealth gap for both of these groups. So on average, they may start off with fewer resources as it is.
Charles O'Neill is a Dallas businessman and president of the Texas African American Chambers of Commerce. He spent most of his career advocating for equal access to business capital.
Stereotypically, when financial literacy is offered in non-white marketplace, it's about balancing a checkbook. It's about managing a credit score.
As a result, non-white entrepreneurs are less prepared to apply for a business loan, even if they're college educated and their business is successful. Surveys by UT Austin and the Dallas Fed found some don't even apply because there's a perception they'll be automatically rejected. But even business owners who turn to investors face challenges. Again, here's Emily Ryder with the Dallas Fed.
In some cases, women and or people of color may lack some of the more robust business networks that their white male counterparts may have. This can limit opportunities.
Bias gets into it. Preconceived notions get into it. And it impacts the kind of investment decisions that those folk with resources make.
Again, Charles O'Neill.
You don't look like me. You don't sound like me. I don't quite understand. Are you sure? And those kind of questions began being raised. And I've got a business plan. I've got a market study. I've got a video. I got a PowerPoint. I got all this stuff. I got an app that I'm ready to blast. And you're asking me if I know what I'm doing?
There have been efforts to reverse this. In 1988, Texas created the Historically Underutilized Business Certification to help business owners earn contracts in the public sector. People of color and women are launching their own venture capital funds, and microloans of under $50,000 have become popular with risk-averse lenders.
If I have an idea for a business and I can get $50,000, I may make it to the end of the year. Maybe. But it's unlikely that I'm going to take that $50,000 and turn it into a $50 million enterprise.
O'Neill says it's up to the lenders and investors to recognize they have a responsibility to correct this and start signing bigger checks. Christina Martinez, KERA News.
Cloudy skies in store for us tonight. There is a 60% chance for showers later on with a low around 68 this evening. And tomorrow, much of the same, showers and storms with a high near 71. It's 6:30. This is KERA News.